bank might be the legal owner of the money. I've explained also the strict settlements of land, which we don't see nowadays, but which explain why so many of the big palaces and castles and stately homes in this country, many now maintained by the National Trust that you've heard about, why these stayed in family homes for so long. And they did it because the owner for the time being, who often didn't trust his son, because, you know, young men, they sometimes spend money, they gamble, they drink. So, English young men at any rate. So what Dad would say is, I'm not going to die and let you have this property because I know what you'll do. You'll mortgage it or you'll sell it because you have these expensive habits. So what he would force on the son is a trust whereby the son simply had the use of the property for his lifetime. But he had to leave it to his son. And then when the son took possession and he had a son growing up, he'd do the same thing on his son. And so it passed through the generations. All of this stopped, really, in the 20th century because taxes became big, and particularly in what used to be called death duties, now inheritance tax, became big in the 20th century for rich people. And it became too expensive to do this. And so what you'll find now is that most of these properties have either been sold or they've been given to the National Trust to manage because the families can't actually afford to manage them anymore. Now, the National Trust is a charity and as such is exempt from these taxes, and it's also exempt from the general rules about trusts. And I haven't mentioned this, but you can't set up a trust forever and ever. So I couldn't, if I was the lord of the manor, I couldn't set up a trust that would bind my son, my grandson, my great-grandson, and so on. You can't do that because there's a principle in English law that land should be free to move around. So I can only do it for about 60 or 80 years. But charities are exempt from that restriction. And charities can tie up land in trust forever, and they do. And that explains why Oxford and Cambridge, the colleges that you've probably seen, beautiful old colleges from the 14th and 15th centuries, and old schools like Eton, why these have continued across the centuries because they are charities. And of course, money was given in the 14th and 15th century, which is now worth millions and millions of pounds. And it's tied up with the property, and of course that explains why Oxford and Cambridge are very rich universities and some others are not. Actually, Reading is quite a rich university. You probably don't know that, but it's in the top 10 of richest universities in this country. It's got a lot of quite expensive endowments, so that's nice, isn't it, for us to know? You couldn't tell from looking at it, but it is. Okay, and then finally, married women's property. Okay, now married women's property, again, I've explained in your handout that married women lost their property in common law when they married. So a single woman had her own property, and a widow had her own property. But when a woman married, her property became her husband's because there was a principle that her husband then had to support her, although he often didn't, in fact. But still, that was the principle. And the difficulty then, particularly if you were a very affectionate father and you weren't very happy about the man that your daughter was marrying, you might think, you know, he's only after her money. He's only going to marry her for her money. So what you would do, and indeed what all upper class and middle class fathers did in England in the 19th century, 18th, 19th, and even into the 20th century, but less commonly now, what they would do is they would set up a marriage settlement or a trust where property was put on trust for the daughter. She could only take the income. She couldn't take the capital. So, for example, I would put £100,000 on trust for my daughter and she could take £1,000 a month or whatever. I mean, I know she wouldn't get £1,000 a month off that, but £1,000 a year, whatever it is, she would take an income. And that would be her money. Because that is not part of common law, that's part of equity. And therefore, It's outside the control of her husband. Now, all of that, as I said, became less common after the passing of the Married Women's Property Acts, which were strenuously fought for by women in what we call the first wave of feminism in the 19th century in this country. Had a big feminist movement in the second half of the 19th century where women fought, obviously, for the vote, but for education, for work opportunities, all sorts of things, and in particular for married women to be able to keep their own property. And now, of course, married women can keep their own property. So we don't see these settlements much, but they're still a tax concession, so we do. Rich people do still do them. Okay.